In many respects, bus travel in America is not all that different from what it was a half century ago. There have been some technological improvements. Interstate buses are a little more streamlined than they used to be. Most have automatic transmissions and air conditioning. But the most significant change has to do with where the passengers sit. On his cross-country bus journey, producer Dan Collison found some people who remember the old days.
I had a ticket, please, work aboard Greyhound through service from Wickford, Virginia to Memphis, Tennessee.
When Leo Haddock first started driving a bus, Dwight Eisenhower was president.
I just love to drive. I just love the road. You stay around home a couple of weeks, and you wonder what's going on over the next hill down there. So you want to get back out there and find out what's going on.
Being on the road for all those years, he's missed a lot.
Birthdays, anniversaries, holidays, and things like that, it's hard being away from home. My son played basketball and missed a lot of basketball games.
But he's also seen a lot.
I've covered all the whole United States in the bus.
Leo Haddock has driven through the Painted Desert at sunrise, through New England when the leaves turn. But the place he remembers best was in the Midwest.
Come out to St. Louis one morning, it real cold and the fog, it froze all over the trees. The sun came out, it looked like a great big crystal chandelier. Most beautiful sight I've ever seen.
Today, Haddock is driving from Nashville to Memphis, a run that takes him to Jackson, Tennessee, and one of the oldest Greyhound stations in the country.
Attention, please, at Jackson, Tennessee. It's a bus of Milan, Humboldt, Paducah.
The bus depot here was built in the 1930s. It's Deco style, with the original Greyhound sign on the roof and a polished black and white tile floor in the lobby. Until the 1960s, black and white passengers sat in separate designated waiting areas. Driver Leo Haddock remembers.
On this side over here, on this side of the terminal, this used to be back when it was segregated there. This was the old black waiting room here. That was the restroom back there.
In between sips of coffee, Haddock, who is white, says he didn't much care for those days.
I didn't like the segregated part. I thought everybody had the same rights.
Flight 8, attention all Greyhound passengers. This will be your last and final. Last and final boarding call, please. 715 departure to Kansas City, Missouri. Now loading from gate number 2. All aboard, please.
At the Greyhound station in Dallas, an elderly African-American man climbs aboard a bus bound for Kansas City. Albert Gardner is on his way home after visiting his daughter and grandson. Gardner is 65 years old, a retired custodian. In his younger days, when he would board the bus, he would have to go all the way to the back.
We didn't know, but my mother would always tell us, or my father, when you get on the bus, let's go right on in the back now. Don't cause no trouble, let's go on in the back.
We'll have a 10-minute break in Gainesville, Texas at 8:50. Then you'll have about a 10-minute break in Paul's Valley, Oklahoma at 10:55.
Dallas to Kansas City is a 15-hour ride across flat and mostly barren terrain, more than 500 miles through towns like Denton, Texas, Guthrie, Oklahoma, and El Dorado, Kansas. Places that Albert Gardner and other African Americans wouldn't even have seen during segregation.
They always had the blinds pulled on each side. We were riding through them little small towns because they'd always tell us to do that, keep trouble down, you know. Whites didn't like us to come in that part of town. They didn't like us to travel through that town. So we'd always stay on the bus and didn't get off. You'd stay on the bus. But after I got a little older, then I began to think about it. You know, wonder why we got to sit in the back. How come we can't sit up to the front?
So Gardner began taking part in civil rights marches.
Dr. Martin Luther King would always be in front, and most of them close to him was inside him, and most of them was in the back. So they would have their little meetings and tell us what to do, nonviolent. Hit you on the other cheek, just turn the face to the other cheek. So just keep on. So that's the best way to fight segregation. Because if we fight back, we'd be fighting in the hand of our enemy, because that's what they would want us to do. But he said nonviolent was the best way.
Folks, this is your through coach to Los Angeles. I'd like to remind you that federal law prohibits smoking on the coach.
In the early 60s, the federal government prohibited segregation on buses and in bus terminals.
Thank God it's no more there. You sit anywhere you want to.
And on this bus, Cleo Hampton, a proud and dignified 61-year-old African-American woman, sits right up at the front.
And gonna remain that way.
She's on her way from her home in Duncan, Oklahoma, to King City, California, to visit her son, who's in the Army.
Proud, very proud of him.
Divorced many years ago, Hampton has six sons, all grown now. And a few years ago, after retiring from her job as a cook at a nursing home, she took custody of four of her grandchildren. It was either that or foster care.
Their mothers had a downfall, and their father had a downfall, so it's a sad situation, but it's just one of those things. I'd messed up with dope and couldn't support the children. Mothers went to the pen. It was someone had to take over, and I took over.
Eric McGee, a 20-year-old African-American who sits in the back of the bus, is determined to be around when his child grows up. He's on his way home to Colorado Springs from Denver after witnessing the birth of his daughter.
I saw her head come out, and it was just like breathtaking.
He's wearing a Tupac Shakur t-shirt and a black silk scarf tied tightly around his head. He has gold designer caps on four of his front teeth.
I have two Nike signs on these first two right here. This one's just a star. Last one over here is a flag. It's a Muslim sign.
McGee says as a teenager, he got into his share of trouble. He's not in a gang, at least not anymore, he says, but a lot of his friends and a close cousin are.
There's people I used to hang with, and
about a mile on the right.
I'm not going to necessarily say they do totally wrong, but, you know, I kind of, you know, sometimes I get in the moods that other people are in. You know, I get influenced by their moods or something like that. I just need to stay away from certain things that I know they're going to do or I know they do, you know.
He has a job in Colorado Springs, working as a service agent for a rental car company. And he goes to junior college, where he's studying to become an accountant. The baby's mother, who is 16, will be a junior in high school this fall. They're moving in together and plan to get married in the next few months. Eric McGee never really knew his father, but he's been thinking a lot about the responsibilities of fatherhood since his daughter was born just a few days ago.
The whole thing of, you know, having a child's life in your hands and just doing right what's right for her. Just knowing that everything I do is going to be about her now.